Welcome. You're listening to the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast, live from the Fly Fishing Show in Denver, Colorado. Fly Fishing Journeys is proud to be broadcasting live from the event and having great conversations with many of the finest fly fishing and fly tying experts in the world. You can find these podcasts posted to our website, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Facebook. To stay up to date with these and other Fly Fishing Journeys adventures, please be sure to follow and subscribe. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Well, welcome back here. We are excited to be at the Denver Show, and I am more than proud to have the director and founder of the Fly Fishing Shows and the International Fly Tying Symposium, Mr. Chuck Faremski. Chuck, thanks for being on our podcast.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
Wow. Well, it's great to have you. Here we are at Denver. The show is about to close down. It's late on Sunday. We've had an absolute wonderful time. We've done a bunch of podcasts. What have you thought about the Denver Show, Chuck?
Well, you know, a lot of people would agree that this is almost the center of fly fishing. Of course, people from England,
yes,
maybe they think it did start over there. But, you know, Denver is like the heartbeat of fly fishing in the country, along with our eastern people in New England and New York. But the Rocky Mountains, there's more fly shops and more streams and more fly fishermen, I think, than any geographic area maybe in the country.
Well, this is absolutely amazing because you originally founded these shows over 30 years ago. Now, it wasn't originally the Fly Fishing Show. Tell us about the last 30 years and how you started these shows.
Well, I lived in Pennsylvania, and I had a business at Seven Springs Mountain Resort. And a friend of mine said, hey, we're going to go to this fly fishing show in Michigan that the FFF Club is putting on. It's the Federation of Fly Fishers. Would you like to ride over with us and go to it? And it was like a 6-7 hour drive. And I knew these guys. I thought it would be fun. So I went there, and they had this really cool show with speakers and a casting pond and vendors and boats and people tying flies. And I met some famous celebrities, and I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I went back to Seven Springs, and we have a festival hall there that was the perfect size for a show.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to Herman Dupre, who was the president that I had known, and he said, well, you bring people here, and they rent rooms from me and buy booze and eat food, and I'll give you the festival hall for free.
Wow.
I said, well, I can't lose. I'll give it a shot. And I thought, wow, that's really a neat idea. But, you know, let me try something on a smaller scale one weekend to see how it goes. So I came up with a thing called the Trout Masters Weekend. And I met Lefty Cray, and he was at that show in Michigan. And I called him, and I asked him if he would come for a weekend, and he was off. I said, I'd like to get a group of people to spend a whole weekend with you, go fishing, tie flies, learn how to do knots, have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with you. So we had the Trout Masters Weekend. We had about 16 people, and I can't remember what we charged, maybe $225. But that was lodging for 2 nights, meals for 3 days or 2 days, and then Lefty to be with him for
wow.
2 days. And at the end of that, Lefty said, you know, you had this big festival hall, which I told him about. He said, why don't you try to get lots of people to come at a lower price and get some people to set up displays instead of just having one celebrity like me come and talk the whole time. Get other people to come. Well, I had met Gary LaFontaine and Gary Borger at that show in Michigan.
Okay.
And I got their business cards. Nobody had cell phones at that time. There were no computers. It was a business card. So that's how I started. And this first show went so well that people were amazed because it was actually the first fly fishing show that an individual had put together.
Mm.
It wasn't a club. The club did it. It was nonprofit. I wasn't a club, and I had to make enough money to pay for the tables and chairs and the workers.
Everything.
Fortunately, Herman didn't charge me for the exhibit hall, which is a big chunk of money usually. And it went over so well that next year we doubled the size.
Wow.
And it just grew for a couple years, and I didn't go anywhere else. And then finally, I met Barry Cerviante, who had a book and tackle fair where he lived in Carlisle. And we became partners and decided to go somewhere where there were millions of people. And we looked and we said, you know, that's more like New Jersey, New York area.
Sure.
Even though it wasn't fly fishing Mecca, you know, these aren't Rocky Mountain trout streams. But they did fly fish, and they'd go all over the world, a lot of the people that would travel. So we started our first fly fishing show in Somerset, New Jersey. And it was a historic event because it wasn't the worst thing that could happen. It was the best thing. The fire marshal closed the doors. We were panicking. He said, I'll let people in when people come out. We had over 6,000 people that came to the show.
Wow.
And we thought if we got 2,500 people, we might have enough money to pay for everything. We got 6,000. So we were already making money the first show. And that's how it started. So.
That's incredible. Well, that is an absolute incredible story. And right now you have seven locations nationwide. And this is going to be an incredible year. 2019 is an absolute incredible year because we are traveling all over the country. This is our first stop here in Denver. And then where do we go next?
Well, next weekend we're off. We usually go right to Boston, to Marlboro, but we have a weekend off. So after the following weekend, we go up to Marlboro near Boston. And then the big show after that is the one in New Jersey. Now, we're not in Somerset anymore because people know that that convention center was purchased by a wealthy individual that needed a giant warehouse. He turned it convention center into an eBay warehouse, and now we had to go into another location, and this other convention center is actually larger and a better location. And last year was our first year, and it was unbelievable.
Edison is
huge.
Awesome.
It was huge. And then after that, the following weekend is the Super Bowl weekend, and guess where we are?
Atlanta.
And we never do a show in Atlanta on Sunday. We always do it Friday and Saturday.
Right.
Because we've been in North Carolina, maybe 12 years. We did Charlotte, we did Winston-Salem, we did Raleigh. And now we decided to move from North Carolina to Georgia because Atlanta was really a great choice to do a show.
Well, everyone's fired up about Atlanta.
And then we have a weekend off. Then we go to Seattle and Lynnwood, right outside of Seattle. The next weekend is in Pleasanton outside of San Francisco, and then we come back to Pennsylvania and end the show season in Lancaster, PA.
Well, I am excited for every stop, and we're excited that Fly Fishing Journeys is part of this tour, this fly fishing tour. We're traveling all over the country, all seven stops, and I couldn't be more excited to head up to the Pacific Northwest because even though my dad's a travel agent and I've traveled all over the world, I have never been up to the Pacific Northwest outside of traveling through. So to get to spend some time in Seattle, and then I'm going to be driving down to Lynnwood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm renting a car in Seattle, and I'm moving, right? And I've got a bunch of destinations to stops along the way, so I'm excited to see the country. And these are great shows.
Well, we have constant talks. Every hour we probably have a choice of 8 to 12 different seminar rooms where you can go and learn all the local fishing or the fishing anywhere in the entire world. We have the experts that are talking about it, showing the images on the screen, answering all your questions. We build usually two casting ponds at every show. You could test the rods. We have casting demonstrations. And it's all included in one ticket price. We have a featured tire, some of the expert flight tires in the whole country, demonstrating every other hour, and a big screen TV shows all the intricate techniques that they use to create the flies. Author's booth where they'll sign your books. We have almost every book written in the last 10 or 20 years on display and available to purchase. So, yeah, it's everything. You can't miss it. Almost every manufacturer of any credit is here with rods, reels, clothing. You know, Patagonia, Sage, Loomis, Scott, Winston, you name it, Abel, all the real companies, they're all here.
Fly shops.
Every fly shop, probably within 50 to 100 yards of the location of the show, has to come here so the people know that they exist.
And people, you can buy your fly tying material right at the show.
Oh, we have, Bill Keough is here. He purchased Hairline Dubbing, I guess, a year and a half ago. He has couple thousand capes for sale right there, with all the feathers that you need for saltwater, nymphs, dry flies, you name it. And you can look at them and feel them. They're not sealed in plastic. You don't have to look on a computer page. You can grab the feathers and twist them and look at them and decide whether you want to buy them or not.
You know, like Ben says, it's like the biggest fly shop in the country.
Exactly. Yeah, I would imagine there's several million dollars worth of merchandise that pass hands here by people purchasing it. As we get a lot of people that buy more than they need, and a lot of people that buy things for the first time.
Right.
So every individual wants to go home with something.
Speaking of Ben, he's now partnered up and kind of taken the reins for the fly fishing shows.
Yeah, supposedly I read that I was retired. And I think,
you do not look retired at all.
How could you retire? I'm tired maybe, but not retired. But my deal is, I said, as long as I could kick and breathe, I'll be around to help you. I introduce the celebrities because it's my chance to keep up with all my friendships that I've had over the years with these people that I work with. I won't get to see them unless I run into them on the stream somewhere, but I know that they're going to be at the shows. So I'll go to every show and introduce the celebrities and then just enjoy shaking hands with people that I know.
Well, speaking of friendships, you know, one thing I do not see around any of these aisles and any of these booths is unhappy people.
I'm telling you, I must have had 40, 50 people just walk past and stop for a second and grab my hand to shake and say, thanks for bringing this show here. Thanks. And I, of course, I tell them, well, I appreciate it, but my son's doing the job now.
Yep.
He's. I said, but then again, he didn't learn I had to teach him everything. You know?
Well, that's what I mean. There are so many friendships here. You got all kinds of groups and people and networking, handshaking and watching the film festival, going out for, you know, a beverage or going out to eat afterwards.
Absolutely.
And it's like a big family, and that's why everyone kind of regroups here. That's what I like about it. Everyone kind of groups around the show.
Well, I'll tell you, one of many things that Ben's done better than I did, because he's a young, handsome guy as opposed to an old fart like me. He has a great area for women here. And if you want to talk about excitement, when these girls get together, we have hundreds of women.
It was a whole women's showcase right here.
We had talks all day, every day for the women. The best women's anglers are here. The magazine, what is it?
Dunn Magazine.
The publisher, people that are doing specialized clothing for women, booths,
fishing wear and
rods, equipment.
Yeah, and Jen Ripple.
And they're using everything the men use because they have the techniques that we have too.
Right.
It's not that they don't have the individual strength and power to be the finesse caster that some of the men aren't. The men are kind of big, muscular, bulky caster. The women are nice and delicate.
Right, so you have those casting demonstrations.
Yeah, they're terrific.
We're going to take a short break in our podcast to thank you, our listeners. We are really excited you found our podcast, and we hope you are enjoying them. One thing we have seen is so many of the early podcasts are still being listened to. People tell us all the time that they start listening to the podcast, they subscribe, then they go back to the start and listen to all the episodes. That's so cool. Thank you. We are happy to announce the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast has just been approved on the Google Play Music Store. So along with Apple Podcast, Stitcher, and Spotify, we should have all the major podcast channels covered. If there are other channels you think we should be on, please let us know. You can also listen directly on our website, flyfishingjourneys.com. If you like our podcast, I would ask that you subscribe on your favorite player and please leave us a review. I know Apple Podcast reviews are very helpful in the show being found. Now back to the podcast.
Chuck, how did you get into fly fishing? I mean, you're running all these shows, all these years. How did it start for you?
Well, there was a guy up the street that fished all the time. That my dad worked night turn. He was worked for the railroad, Pennsylvania Railroad, and we only got to fish on Sundays. And this other guy up the street went a lot in evening when my dad went to work, and then on Saturdays. But he was a bait fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned how to fish bait really good because this guy caught more fish than anybody. And that allowed me to pass it on to when I started fly fishing, which, to answer your question, I must have been, I'd say, 15 or 16. And there was a guy fly fishing for crappie bass at Keystone Park Lake, and we were there for a picnic. And I watched him catch these crappies like crazy. And he showed me how to cast a rod. And I kind of got hooked on that. But I never got really into it until I went to college. And I went to Penn State, and many of the readers and listeners probably know George Harvey's name. They call him the Dean of Fly Fishing. And he started the first credited fly fishing course in college. So I thought, hey, I can get 2 credits. I'm going to take a fly fishing class. Well, I loved it so much, and George and I got along so well. He got me into the sport 110%.
Wow.
And after I graduated from college, I met him. We fished together. I visited him all the time because the opening of trout season in Pennsylvania is a ritual. And every year I went back to Penn State to fish for almost a week. And I'd visit George, and he showed me all the stuff that he had discovered. And he was, what, 75 then at that time or so? I think he passed away when he was 94. But he's the one that's got me into fly fishing and one of the first celebrities that I got to come to the shows when I started at Seven Springs.
Wow.
George came, and, of course, people that took his class at Penn State wanted to come and see him again. So it was a good draw for numbers of customers coming to the show.
What is your passion about fly fishing? Where do you like to go? What do you like to do when you go fly fishing?
Well, I think most of the people like the action of fly fishing by catching fish on dry flies or poppers or some kind of surface fly that they would use, either a dry fly fishing for trout or surface fishing for largemouth bass. I've been fishing for sailfish on the top, catching them within 20 feet of the boat. The visual thing of all the excitement all of a sudden exploding in front of you, and then your rod bends in half, and there you are. You're in heaven catching a fish. I like that part. I like the underwater stuff, too, the nymphing and the streamer fishing, because you're directly in touch with your line and the flies at the end of your leader, and when a fish grabs it, you feel that tug on your fly line, and then, oh, boy, I got a fish. So,
and you're a big striper fisherman, too.
Yeah. I live in Ocean City, New Jersey now. We moved this past spring. We sold our house in Pennsylvania, and we moved to our summer home that we've owned for a long time in Ocean City. And I have a boat for the bay, and I have a little bit bigger boat for the ocean. So I fish probably sometimes twice a day, depending on the tides. Maybe 5 days a week on average, I would say.
Wow, you are hardcore.
It depends on the weather. I don't like to fish in rough, windy water. Small craft warnings, I won't go.
You know? Sure, sure.
Ben will go. My son will go.
Oh, yeah, and he's fishy.
Oh, yeah.
He's taking me fishing. He's fishy.
Yeah.
Well, when you say we, you talk about you and your lovely wife, Janet, who's helped you with the show?
Yeah, but she doesn't fish.
Oh.
She doesn't fish. She hears it constantly from me. She goes to the beach. When I go, I'll go with her and maybe sit for 3 hours. And then I'm saying, well, tide's coming in. I'll see you at dinner time or something.
But
I'll go fishing.
She's very instrumental in the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She runs the front.
She didn't come to Denver. She was supposed to retire like I was, and she actually did.
She's very happy.
First year she'd do 7 shows, then 5, then 4. Then she's down to 2 now.
Okay.
She's
going
to do the one in Boston and the one in New Jersey.
Great. Well, we'll see here Ben Marlboro for
sure
then.
But I'm still doing all 7.
Good for you. Well, you also have this love of yours, fly tying.
Oh, yeah.
And you're an amazing fly tyer, and your flies are actually in a fly tying company. Which company do you use? Rainey's?
Yeah, Rainey has my patterns. I was at the trade show years ago, and she happened to be coming by, and I was demonstrating. And I don't get to demonstrate because I'm the one always inviting people
right
to tie. And a lot of people don't even know that I tie flies. But she saw me, and she said, I'd like to talk to you. And I wondered, well, what did I do, you know? She said, I've watched you tie, and your patterns are so different. I'd like to have you as one of my pro staff tires. Well, the reason my flies were different is because at the ski resort, because I was there, I had a store called Old Man Winter Leather Shop.
Okay.
And I know all about leather because I had the store for 42 years. Well, I tie a lot of my flies out of leather that I have machined down to a very thin thickness, very thin, and I call it bugskin. And my flies are different because they're tied with New Zealand lambskin, and most flies are tied with hair and feathers and fur. But I just really enjoy creating it out of the leather.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then you also have the Fly Tying Symposium.
Well, Ben was so busy with the fly fishing shows, the Fly Tying Symposium was going to be in November. And he's up to his ears right there in November and December, 2 months prior to the kickoff of the fly fishing show season. So he's working on brochures, programs, celebrities, tying up all the loose ends of the floor plans. And he wouldn't be able to do the Tying Symposium. So I still run that 100%. I still haven't retired out of that.
Well, tell us about the symposium, because we just came from it.
You were there.
Yeah, I was. It was absolutely amazing. If you want, I could talk about the symposium. Well, what I love about the symposium is there's an incredible family and camaraderie around fly tying.
Everybody's so anxious to meet each other a year later, because if they don't see each other fishing during the season, they know that they're going to come and tie flies in November. We all stay in the same hotel. This year we went to the Sheraton in Parsippany.
Parsippany!
Yeah. And
it was like a castle.
It's like a giant castle. Because the convention center was sold, the DoubleTree is where I used to do the show. That weekend was not available, so I had to find a new location. Well, I got the contract for the next year again.
Awesome.
We're going back the weekend before Thanksgiving is our usual weekend.
And that's, while they have some fly shops and then some vendors, that is just packed with tables of fly tires.
The whole theme is all fly tying. We don't have a casting pond. We don't have people booking trips, exotic trips. It's mainly people with hooks and beads and feathers and fly boxes and everything that has to do with fly tying.
And the demonstrations you have.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
And you can kind of walk right up to that fly table with so many different fly tires, like over 100.
Yeah,
And they're all vetted, and that's what's nice about it. It's great if you're still kind of learning the trade and you're perfecting your craft, but this would not be a spot that you would necessarily tie, because these fly tires are vetted. They're the best in the world, and people come from all over the world.
Well, we had 7 different countries, I think, represented. Argentina, England, Scotland, Belgium, Netherlands, Sweden. We had a guy who came from South Africa. But,
well, speaking of great people from other countries, I have to ask you about a great friend of yours. We just actually pushed out a podcast for Mr. Theo Bakelaar from the Netherlands.
Right.
Tell our listeners about Theo.
Well, I wasn't there the first time he came to the country, but he came when the FFF had a conclave in Yellowstone Park. Wasn't Park, I guess it was West Yellowstone, that's right. Well, he had come up with this idea that he picked it up, I believe, from Roman Moser from Austria, and it was to put little gold beads on a hook to slide up to the eye of the hook, and they gave you flash and they gave you weight. So he had, and this was just gold beads. Now, right now, you know how many different colored beads there are. There's slotted beads, there's cone heads, there's flat heads, there's everything. Well, he came to the conclave and he painted his head gold. And he was bald. And his nickname was Theo Goldbead Bakelaar. And Lefty met him there, and he couldn't believe it, because Lefty was such a character, as everyone knew. But Theo was unbelievable. And he gave some flies to Lefty. And Lefty had never seen beadhead flies. And right now, there probably isn't one fly fisherman that doesn't have half his flies with beads on it.
And that is how they originated.
He was the one that started. He brought it over, introduced it to the United States.
Yeah. Dressed in gold.
Right. And then he had to go into the hospital to get the gold car paint off his skin that he put on, that he didn't realize wouldn't come off that easy.
I heard he used it car paint.
He doesn't do that anymore.
Yeah, no more Mr. Gold bead head.
But he comes to the shows every November. He's never been to our big shows in January and February. He comes in November because he stays and fishes with me for stripers before and after the show.
And you got and he got a huge one this year.
Oh, he catches a lot of big ones. Yeah.
Ben takes credit for that fish, you know.
Well, Ben's a good captain. He knows where to find a fish.
Mr. Teo Bacala, and actually meeting Teo was one of the highlights of me being at the symposium this year. I enjoyed him so much, and he's such a character.
Oh, yeah. He has a real good heart. He has a real good personality, and he started a group for the veterans over in Holland because he was in the service.
Yeah, Project Healing Waters. He took it overseas, back home, to the Netherlands.
Yep, he started it over there, and a lot of people gave him money at the show. To offer as a donation.
Yep.
And he got material from Umqua gave him material. Hairline Dubbing, Wapsie, he got all kinds of stuff to start the program over there.
Well, you know, you mentioned, before we close, I have to talk here because you've mentioned a very special name that I want you to speak of. And you know, if the walls could talk, the stories that you have over the years of all the celebrities, all the famous fly tires, you've probably met them all. But there's one very special one that we lost last year that you had a great relationship with. So I would like you to talk just a minute about your relationship with Lefty Cray.
Well, he did so many shows with me. It was like he was my boss, really. I paid him, but I got lessons from him all the time. But he never forced you to change your opinion. He always had the evidence and the proof to back it up, unlike some things that are happening in this country today.
Sure.
But Lefty was funny, too, besides being so knowledgeable. The first time I met him, I just reached out and we shook hands, and he said, "Hey, where's my ring?" And that was one of his stock jokes. I thought, well, this guy's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But he always worked hard. He came to our shows a few months before he knew it was coming to the end of his life because he had several things wrong with him, and it was in his 90s. But he worked hard. The last show, he said, "Well, I'll cast for you, but this is the last show. But I would like you to put a chair in front of the casting pond because I have a hard time keeping my balance for a half an hour casting." Well, the chair lasted about 10 minutes. He kicked it aside. He stood up and he had 200 people howling and loving him.
Laughing. And yeah,
he had a great time.
So genuine. Would come up and talk to anybody. Spent time with you.
He loved to take pictures with the kids and the ladies. And he always said the ladies listen better than the men. But he was a legend, and no one will ever fill his shoes. But we have a lot of great young people, especially if you were able to walk around the show here. Boy, there's a lot of young talent.
Unbelievable.
Here at this Denver show that my son met. That's why I think he's doing such a good job, because he relates with his age to the people that, you know, to me, I'm an older guy to them. They're not going to talk as much to me as they will to someone younger.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to be on the shows, Chuck. I thank you very much for allowing Fly Fishing Journeys to podcast at the shows. You actually gave me this idea. I think we'll close with this. You gave me this idea. I was podcasting last year at the Marlboro show, and I was podcasting just on the side with Bob Mallard from the Native Fish Coalition.
Yeah.
And what happened was I came up to you, and I said, "Chuck, might you have a quiet place where I could do a podcast?" And you looked at me and you said, "You know, I think we need to find you someplace out in the open where people could listen to that, because they might want to listen to that podcast." And I was like blown away.
Oh.
I was stunned. And now we here in Denver, we have speakers where people can actually stand around and listen to the podcast. And to see the reception has been amazing. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, it's all about helping each other. We get more people coming to the shows. And I told you that story. Remember I mentioned about Tim Camisa?
Yes.
He was on your podcast, and he ran into people fishing on the stream yesterday up at Lake Erie because they heard the podcast that you did at the symposium.
And that was only a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So it's just the social media thing is bringing more customers to us, which means more ticket sales, more money to hire, more celebrities, more programs, more demonstrations. It just keeps growing. I'm glad that everybody is having such a great time here. You know, maybe the government shut down, but the fly fishing show is going 110%. So come and see it. You won't be dissatisfied. You'll have a great time. You'll see a lot of friends and meet a lot of new friends.
Well, that's fantastic. Let's give our listeners the final destination spots where they can come out. That's Marlboro, Mass, just outside of Boston.
Right.
And then they're going down to Edison, New Jersey, followed up by Atlanta, Georgia, Linwood, Washington, up near Seattle, then down to Pleasanton, California, and then finally back to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Yeah. And you can find out all the details at flyfishingshow.com.
Right. And then the information's on there with every show that tells you who the celebrities are. And this was our best show that we've ever had for people signing up for classes. You could buy a ticket and go through everything and see it, but we also have some private classes where you can go one-on-one in a room with a half a dozen to 10 people and talk with a major celebrity and learn for 2.5 hours.
That's
phenomenal. We had over 200 people that signed up for classes here in Denver this
year. That's incredible. Well, it's a great event. It's a great show. We want you to visit flyfishingshow.com to find out all the details, the programs, the seminars, the celebrities, the authors, all the great stuff, the tires. And we look forward to seeing you, Chuck, at the next show. We'll see you in Boston over there at Marlboro, Mass.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher and follow us on Facebook. And please like and share our podcast with your friends. For past episodes or to read our journal blog posts, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you are on this journey with us.